Hello, Columbus, Chattahoochee Valley, all my friends down near the Florida-Georgia line. You know I had to give you that normal shout-out because we do appreciate all of our listeners. All my people over in Taylor and Talbot and Marion County. What is going on? Man, I see that the Marion County boys made the state championship tournament. As well as Macon County boys. And so, you know, those are some single-A schools. I attended a single-A school. And don't slip on single-A now. There's some good basketball going on down there. So, you know, Macon County, Marion County, we wish you guys the best of luck in your tournament, and we hope that things go well. We are continuing our Sunday conversation theme of Black History Month this month. Of course, this is Black History Month, so all month we are celebrating the culture and the contributions of African Americans to the United States of America and things that we have done as a people to advance society, to advance life. And if you think about it, this has been some phenomenal contributions. I mean, the first open heart surgery was done on the south side of Chicago by a black doctor. You know, that's just one of the few things that we have contributed to this society, the ability to even do that. But here locally, we also have some very deep, rich history. We had a great conversation last week with Mr. Ronzell Buckner, and I'm excited about the conversation today. I have a good friend here with me here in the studio. He's also a mentor of mine and just been amazing ever since I moved here. His family just took me in, and you know, I can't count the number of times I've sat down and broke bread with him and visit them at their location and things of that nature. It's just good to have folks to talk to. And, you know, we have to make sure, again, and I've said this over and over, we have to make sure that we, as a society, understand what our foundation builders had to go through so that we can do what we do today. And when I say the foundation builders, I mean the ones that made a difference for us to be able to do what we do, those that advance the rule of law, those that advance what was right and what's wrong in our community, making sure we're calling out what's wrong, making sure we're calling out injustice. And that's just so important that we continue to fight those battles, because if we don't, then those that want to put us in those situations will think that it's okay. They'll think, okay, they're not going to fight back. They're not going to say anything, so we can do that. But I'm excited to have with me today one of probably one of the finest lawyers to ever come through Columbus, Georgia. You know, he worked on a lot of things, fought for a lot of folks here in the city, and we're going to talk a little bit about that today. But I got with me Mr. Bill Wright. How you doing?
I'm good, Ted. How are you?
Well, I am awesome. Thank you so much, Mr. Wright, for being here with us today. You know, I don't know anybody in this city that don't know you and your brother, Bill and Bob Wright.
Well, we've been around for a minute.
You've been around for a minute, and you have made a tremendous impact on society. So we're talking about local Black Columbus history, and I just want to talk a little bit about you guys growing up and what was the city like and some of the progression that you've seen. Now you guys grew up near the Liberty District area, right?
Well, actually, I was born in the shotgun house at 4th Street Baptist Church is. And then around the corner, our grandfather had a house that we called Down Home. And look, everybody lived there. All my aunts and everybody else lived there. And then we lived down the street in a house we called Brush Shack. And that's where it was.
You call it what now?
Brush Shack.
Brush Shack?
Yeah.
Now, why did y'all get a house's name? Down Home, Brush Shack?
Hey, man, I think my folks started calling that house that, and we just took it up. But that's exactly what it was. You know, back then, if you lived in the projects, you were doing good.
Wow.
Because you had indoor bathrooms and kitchens and things like that. But Brush Shack, we had to go outside.
Wow.
And I can remember it was so cold. My mother used to bring a slop jar in there, so we had to use the bathroom at night. They would use that slop jar. And then she would pile so many blankets on us that we really couldn't hardly turn over. But it was fun growing up downtown
now,
there.
Now, I'm a country boy, so I know what a shotgun house is. You know, it's one where you could look through the front door and see right out the back.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, sir. I know, but you know, we got some young folks listening that may not know exactly what a shotgun house is.
Probably not.
It's pretty much a long house.
That's right.
And most times you can look through one door and see out the other.
Yep.
In the back.
That's about right.
And so this was in the historic area, the back part of the historic area by 4th Street Baptist Church.
No, that's where I was born, but you got to go up the other block towards, what's that church there on 6th Street?
Mm-hmm.
What's that church there, the Baptist church there on the corner?
Not First African?
No, not First African.
Uh-huh.
That near Caldwell's grocery store.
Okay.
Up that way.
Okay.
And we lived in that block.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Allens lived on the corner of 2nd Avenue and 5th Street.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was really, really good growing up down there. We did a lot playing sports and things like that and getting into much deeper as we could.
Were the schools still segregated around that time?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so as kids, did you guys play with little white kids, or did you never see them in your neighborhood? Or
there was some, if you can visualize where 4th Street Church is right now,
mm-hmm.
and if you go west on 5th Street, then whites live down there. But we all lived on that other section there where 2nd Avenue was.
Okay.
Every now and then they might come down and play with us, but that was rare.
It was rare?
Yeah, that was rare.
Okay.
And we never went down that way.
Now, so during that time, was the Liberty District a vibrant area? Did you have a lot of black businesses there? Did you guys go around there, Porter Auditorium in that area?
Oh, yeah, that was thriving. That was the heart of the black community, 6th and 8th.
So talk to us about what that would be like. What would a typical night be like around 6th and 8th?
Well, of course, when I was small, I wasn't going around there, but mm-hmm. when I got to grow a little older,
mm-hmm.
There was a club there, upstairs, on the corner of 5th Avenue and, I'm sorry, 6th and 8th. And then you go around the Liberty Theater. There were several different little clubs around there. Make It Web had a place down there. Mm-hmm. The S&W Lounge, where Floyd Washington had a place down there. There was another place, the Domino. So all those places were in close proximity to the Liberty Theater. Matter of fact, they were in the same block, side of the street.
Now, your mother was a nurse, right?
Correct.
And at that point in time, for a black woman to be a nurse, that was a very huge accomplishment. What kind of impact you think that had on her?
Tremendous impact, because I saw her do what she had to do in order to become what she became. You know, when she graduated from high school around here, she had to go to Spelman. Matter of fact, no. They didn't have high school here.
Mm-hmm.
She had to go to Spelman, and she graduated from there, and then went to nursing school in Meharry in Nashville. And then she had further study in public health nursing. She had to go to Richmond, Virginia for
Did
that.
Did y'all travel with her to these places?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No. We had aunts and all that kept us. And one of them in particular said I was real, real bad. I couldn't understand what. Liz asked her what she meant by that. Couldn't really give me a straight answer. Just said I was just bad. That's all.
You were a little bad.
Yeah.
So, growing up, what was the relationship like with you and Bob? You know, I know, you know, people here they see Bob Wright and they see, you know, this amazing guy that has done so much for a lot, you know, same as yourself, and both of you just making tremendous impacts on the community here in Columbus. I'm sure you couldn't have imagined any of this growing up as a child. Like, did you know you wanted to become a lawyer?
In the back of my mind, I did. Didn't know how I was going to get there. But yeah, in the back of my mind, I did want to be a lawyer. And mainly because growing up, the only lawyer in town was Albert Thompson. And, you know,
he was the only black lawyer in
town? Only black lawyer in town, Albert Thompson.
Wow. Okay.
And you know, you can see how he was being treated.
Did you get a chance to talk to
him? Yeah.
Did he ever share any stories with you on what it was like being the first black lawyer having to work in the courtrooms here and the type of treatment he received?
Yeah, a lot of it. Some of that was still going on when I first started practicing. But yeah, he had to... Well, he was being treated just like a second-class citizen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they treated him like a second-class citizen.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, turn it off.
And so, what made him continue to want to do that then?
I guess that's all he had to do. And then he was the first... legislator, as I can recall, and he practiced law solo all of his career. When I got out of law school, I came back and sat down and talked to him. I wanted to go to work in his firm because he told me that he was the firm. So I had to strike out on my own. But it was difficult. One of his good friends, Hickey White, you don't know him, but he was one of the first police officers around here.
One of the first black police officers?
Yeah.
And what was his name again?
Hickey White.
Hickey White?
Yeah. Okay. Clarence White was a real name.
Clarence White.
Yeah, but nickname was Hickey.
Okay.
And he and Al were good friends. And he would just tell us how they would treat him down there in the courtroom. I mean, it was just like he was nothing.
Did he have to go through back doors or anything like that? Was the courtroom segregated?
No, it wasn't segregated. But you know, back then they still had the colored fountains and the white fountains, and you could see where they were.
And of course, this is not the courtroom that we see today. I've seen photos. Columbus used to have a beautiful courthouse with an amazing rotunda.
Yeah, that was an old courthouse, but really, I'm referring now to mainly Ricardo's Court that was across the street from the courthouse. Well, that give you a point of reference where that was. It was west of the government center.
Okay.
And so
when you came here and started practicing, had race relations gotten any better?
Oh yeah, they got a lot better.
A lot better.
A lot better.
So what did you have to really work on any civil rights cases? And do you recall what some of those cases were?
By the time that I got. Back here practicing law, most of that stuff was all over with. And there were I never did file a civil rights lawsuit. I don't think anyone else did that I can recall. But because everything was just about integrated then.
Okay. So everything was pretty much integrated.
Oh yeah.
At that point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so when Mr. Clarence White, Hickey White, when him becoming the first black on the Columbus Police Department, was that a community-based effort? Was there like a uprising to make that happen? What do you think, what led to that?
It's kind of hard to say, because this was like maybe 54, somewhere.
1954.
Yeah.
We were just getting out. Columbus was just getting his first black police
officer. Yeah, and it was five of them. And but of course they couldn't arrest white people.
Well, wait a minute, hold up. So the first African American police officers hired to the force here in Columbus could not arrest white people?
That's correct. And they didn't have cars either. They had to walk the beach.
So other officers had cars?
Yeah.
And they did not have cars?
They didn't have cars.
Not even a horse?
Nope. Not even a horse.
They made them walk?
They had to walk.
So did they have to go to the police station and check in and then walk to their coverage?
No, because I recall one night I rode downtown with Hickey so he could start his shift, and we just put him out down on 6th and 8th, and he just started walking. And that was his beat round in there. So I have no cars.
And, you know, as sad as that sound, it was probably good for them, because if they had to go to the station and clock in or something like that, ain't no telling what type of treatment they would have received.
Yeah, that's true. But I think they could probably handle it.
Wow.
Those guys, they were no nonsense guys. I don't think they would stand for any of that kind of stuff.
So growing up, pretty much, kind of in what was the heart of Columbus, mm-hmm. in the historic area, not far from 4th Street Baptist Church and Trent and moving on over toward the Liberty District and kind of growing that way.
Mm-hmm.
What were some things that you remember as a child that happened in the city that just kind of like just rocked the community or anything that happened that just, you know, made a lot of waves?
Well, my dad was a brick mason, mm-hmm. and I already talked about Brother Shack, so what he did was he bought a lot out in Winton on Laurie's Lane. And he and his big bricklaying buddies would go in on the evenings and weekends and build a house. It took a little over a year to build it. And it was across the street from the Lunsfords.
Mm-hmm.
And I can recall the Ku Klux Klan coming through one night and burning a cross in their front yard.
And this was Lula's mother.
Yeah.
The Career Tax Commission of Lula.
Her grandmother.
Her grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
The Ku Klux Klan burnt the cross. Did you see the cross?
I did. We were right across the street now.
So you were living in that house at the time?
Yes.
And across the street from the... Did you see them put the cross out there?
No, we saw it burning.
Was it late at night?
Wasn't that late.
It wasn't that late?
Mm-mm. No, it wasn't.
What did that do to the community? Did that scare people, or was there a community meeting or anything after that?
Well, if so, you know, I was a little boy then, so I don't know
uh-huh.
whether or not there was any meetings about that or not. But you know, nobody was intimidated. I can tell you that, not that I could tell.
Right. Why do you think they targeted the Lunsfords?
Because she was doing a lot of things in the community. And they didn't like, and that's why they talked to her. She was a business person, owned property around town, and they didn't like that. So, a lot of the.
So she wasn't harming anybody. She wasn't.
Oh no.
You know, being extra radical about social change or anything. She was just literally just making smart business moves.
That's right. And, you know, and then back then, you had professional athletes to come to town,
mm-hmm.
like Hank Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to stay at people's houses. There was nowhere else for them to stay. Couldn't stay with the team at the Rawson Hotel. And she had dignitaries that come to town, and they would stay, you know, with her, and they'd have dinner at her house and things like that, and they just didn't like that.
We got to take a quick break, but when we come back, I got to ask you a follow-up question about that, because I am very curious about that there. This is Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. I am having a very informative conversation with with Mr. Bill Wright, you know, the brother Bob Wright, the Wright brothers, not the ones that flew the airplane, but the ones that changed Columbus. The Wright brothers that changed Columbus. How about that? But we're going to have a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
Yeah, I know you heard me. You have a new text. Go ahead, pick me up and check it out. You don't want to miss anything. It could be important. You should check now. Do you want to seem rude? You should respond now. Come on, just pick me up. It'll just take a second.
Don't text and drive. Hands-free cell phone use is now the law. This message brought to you by the Georgia Department of Transportation.
Welcome back to Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. We're going to jump right back in. I'm certainly having a very informative and very eye-opening conversation with Mr. Bill Wright, born and raised right here in Columbus, Georgia. His mother was one of the first black nurses, not the first, but one of the first black nurses here in the city, who didn't, you know, wasn't able to finish high school here, but went on to Spelman to further her education and then to Meharry. And of course, Mr. Wright himself, he's practiced law here in town. And his brother Bob Wright, he was an eye doctor, right?
That's correct.
An eye doctor. So, you know, they've had a very impactful family that has done a lot for this city. And of course, Bob Wright served on city council. But Mr. Bill, I want to go back to, you said when dignitaries came to town and when like professional players came to town, they couldn't stay at the hotel.
That's correct.
So they had to stay with different families. I guess my follow-up question is, how did these families know that they were coming to prepare for them? Like, if you have a traveling baseball team, Hank Aaron was with the traveling baseball team, who would coordinate where he would stay when they came to Columbus?
I have no idea. But obviously, the manager of the team or whomever was responsible for these guys would find some place for them to stay.
But they had to do this in every city.
Yeah, they had to do it in every city.
So somebody had to tell them, well, you know, the Longsfords, they will house dignitaries, or they will house, you know, singers or performers or athletes or something. They had to know who to call.
That may have been done through the NAACP. I just don't know.
It just sound like, you know, for many years, people didn't know that the Green Book existed. And the Green Book was what African Americans had to use to know when they're traveling. Where were stores that was safe to stop?
Exactly.
Where were hotels that was safe to stop? It sounds like we need to document these homes that athletes and singers had to stay in when they came to a smaller city like Columbus, simply because they couldn't stay in the hotels.
Mm-hmm. Now, finally, they did have a Lowe's Hotel down on Fifth Avenue. And I guess maybe they stayed there too. And then later on, when they developed Carver Heights, that was a Carver Heights Motel. And that's still down out there now. It's not a hotel now. But that's where.
Is that across from the Carver football field?
No, it's down a little bit from the football field.
Okay.
It's right at the intersection of Rigdon Road and Elders Road, if you know where it kind of bisects.
Okay, uh-huh.
And there's a shopping grocery store. And then behind that, a lot of shops and all the beauty shops and things like that.
Right.
That's where the hotel was.
Okay.
Motel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Wow. So, you came back, you practiced law here, and what did you think about the Columbus that you came back to in comparison to the one that you left?
There have been some progress made, and but not enough.
Mm-hmm.
We still had a lot of work to do. It didn't necessarily have to pile any lawsuits, but you know, there were things that I personally did that in order to make certain that you know I was respected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing that you have to do with white folks sometimes, just let them know what time of day it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've had to one of the DAs down there, assistant DAs, I had to invite him out outside, and we were going to settle some things with our fists. He didn't show up though. And that was another one too that you know, you had to just let her know you just not going to take
sure
this stuff.
You a little radical, huh?
Oh man, I wasn't going to take nothing off of them. Not a thing.
And you know, and it's always certain ones. It's because there are some great white people out here in the world. Let's be honest.
Oh yeah.
You know, those that helped fight the civil rights, those that died during the civil rights movement so we would get equal treatment. Even the ones that fought in the Civil War, and you know, but living in the South,
mm-hmm.
we know what you're talking about. We know the challenges.
Yeah. Now, one thing I can say, all the white lawyers were very, very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
When I started practicing law, they would help you out, and I had no problem with any of these lawyers except two.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no point in calling names,
right.
but everybody else, John Denny was one of my mentors, Frank Martin, John Swearingen, these guys are really, really helpful, and I used to go down to the court and watch them try cases. So that I could learn how to do it, and that's one way to do it too. You go watch guys try cases, and then you know, you see how it's done.
Right.
So I did a lot of that. Didn't have too many clients, so I wasn't in my office a lot.
So you had some time.
Had some time. Yeah.
Had some time. Okay.
But but it was very I would say rewarding. I thoroughly enjoyed practicing law.
Now, you ran for office one time, right?
I did, and I'm glad I didn't win.
You're glad you didn't win. We'll come back to that question, but you ran for, was it state senator?
State senator.
Okay.
And Ed Harbison and I ran for that seat, and he won, and I didn't, and I'm glad he did. You know, being a one-man show, you'd be away from your office up there in the legislature,
uh-huh.
I think, you know, Gary Parker had that seat, I think, before he did, and he had to give it up.
Right.
You just couldn't do it. So, but Ed has served as well.
Yes, he has. I absolutely agree with that. He has been a phenomenal state senator.
Yeah, he has.
Absolutely.
Did
you guys talk after that election?
Oh yeah, Ed and I, you know, always been good friends.
You know, and I'm glad to hear that, because for some reason we have seemed to have adopted this theory that if someone opposes you in an election, then they got to be your permanent enemy.
Oh no, there's nothing like that. You know, and we didn't sling any mud or anything like that, because I was running as a Republican, and that back then, you know, back being a black Republican wasn't a party to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Although my brother was on the city council as a Republican, but
mm-hmm.
Probably he couldn't probably not have gone to state level as a Republican. But my experience in the legal field has been, I think, very, very gratifying. In particular, when you know you walk down the street and somebody comes up to you and say, I recognize you represented me. Mm-hmm. And you don't know who in the world this person is, but he remembers you.
Right.
And apparently you did something good for him, otherwise they would have come up and curse you out.
Right.
Instead of saying you really did help me out.
You know, it's a rewarding profession being an attorney.
It really is.
But it takes a lot of work. And you have to really walk in your purpose with this.
Well, you know, nothing worthwhile is ever easy.
That's right.
And if you think it is, then you're fooling yourself. Now, one thing I really, really did enjoy was when I was on the bench in Recorder's Court.
Mm-hmm.
Now that
you
was
you served as a judge
mm-hmm.
in Recorder's Court. Okay,
yeah.
Let's talk about that. What was that experience like?
Oh, that was a tremendous experience. And this, let me back up, because at first I was one of the public defenders down in Recorder's Court, and I used to sit there day in and day out, and watch these people get shafted.
Wow.
Just, you know, whatever the police officer says, that's it. You can have a dozen witnesses up there to refute what he says. No good. Still don't believe the police officer. And when I got appointed to the bench, now the one thing that I decided I would not do, and that's going to take the word of a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
Or was that of a civilian just because he's a police officer?
I think that's fair.
It is fair.
I think that's fair. And you know, and we even have rules in court that testimony alone can't convict someone. You have to have supporting evidence.
Yeah, but back then, the only thing you had was testimony of the police officer, and that was good enough. And I just saw that just so, how can I put it, just no justice.
So how did the police department receive it once you were on the bench and you were now requiring them to do more than just say this is what the person did?
They didn't like it. They didn't like it at all.
Were you targeted? Did they try to get you kicked off the bench?
They did. And eventually did get me kicked off the bench. They wrote a letter to the council and told them not to reappoint me because I was dismissing too many of their cases. So, well. So I went before the council and I told them, I said, look, y'all appointed me down there to be fair and impartial. And that's the way I've been. And I'm not going to sit down and just rubber stamp everything the police officer says when I know it's not true.
Right.
And I told them that if they, you know, in other words, they can take that job and stick it. Because I was just not going to do it.
Wow.
And
what did the makeup of council look like at that time?
4 blacks and 5 whites, I believe. Something like that.
Was this around the same period in which the garbage truck drivers went on strike?
No.
I guess I'm asking, mm-hmm. what, was Uncle Bob still on the council at that time?
I don't think he was.
Okay. Okay.
I don't think he was. I think it was off then.
It was after that.
Mm-hmm.
What was the impact in the city when that happened? Did they replace you with another African American, or did they replace you with a Caucasian, or who did they replace you with?
Yeah, I think they did. Who did they appoint? Mary Buckner.
Okay.
And she had been on the bench before and then got into a little trouble.
Uh-huh.
But they thought that she deserved to be back down there again, so they reappointed her. And she, I thought she was still down there. I think that they changed things around now, and Julius Hunter is the only full-time judge that got down there. So, but she was there too. Yeah, but she did replace me.
So considering everything that you have experienced as a child, growing up in segregated communities, going to segregated schools, going to obtain a law degree and coming back and practicing law and even serving on the bench here in Columbus, what's your hope for the city moving forward? What kind of future would you like to see for Columbus, and how do you think we get there?
you know, I was thinking and hopeful that we were really had turned the page on racism and that sort of thing, but when you really look at it, it's still prevalent. Is that undercurrent? It's not the overt racism like we you know we used to see, mm-hmm. like the cross burning and things like that, but it's still there. It's still the good old boy network. It's still prevalent. I think Columbus breathes different air than the rest of the state. Columbus is the last to get everything. Right now, we don't even have a black Superior Court judge.
That's true.
And that's a shame. You got, what is it, 7 Superior Court judges down there now, not one single black?
Right.
And we make up almost 50% of the population?
Over 50.
Yeah, well, see, that's yeah, that's
over
50. See, that's ridiculous. And in that regard, to me, we take a step backwards.
Right.
See, when John Adams retired, there should have been another black person that they appointed to the bench. Didn't do it. And the reason why is they don't respect black people around here anymore. They don't. I've always said that the only thing that white people respect from a black person is violence or the threat of violence. They respect that. They don't necessarily respect money. But when we started burning up the city, the country, that's when they finally started doing some things. Even when Martin Luther King was, he just about lost his effectiveness by the time he was assassinated. This country did not stand up and take notice until they started burning up the country.
And it's sad that we got to go to that level because we should never want to result to violence. We shouldn't have to.
We should. You're right. To. But a lot of times, I'm not saying that are all black, white people,
right.
but some of them, that's the only thing they understand.
Right.
And it's a shame.
It is. So what's your hope for the city?
I hope that they will finally come to the realization that we are equal. But first, the black people got to come together, mm-hmm. and start, you know, protesting things. Don't do that anymore. It should have been protesting when we didn't appoint a black to the Superior Court bench.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been an outcry.
Mm-hmm.
The black community is silent. They're
Why
doing.
Are we silent?
I don't know. I wish I did.
You know, historically, we've always had leaders to help us with those type challenges and help us lead those type efforts. Do you not think that's an assessment of leadership?
I would think you're right. We have a leadership void here, I think, in this town. You know, nobody's willing to stand up and be counted.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jack. This 30 minutes went by so fast. But I just want to close today on something that you just said. We got to stand up and be counted.
Absolutely.
We got to stand up and be heard. We got to stand up and point out the injustice. You can do that. We can do that without resorting to violent measures. We can do that by being respectful.
Yeah.
We can do that through basic humanly decent recourse. We can. I know we can. But it takes leadership.
It does.
And we can feel that leadership void. And we're going to feel that leadership void. This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. Mr. Bill Wright, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for sharing such amazing history, you know, about the cross burnings and the first black police officer and things of that nature. I certainly learned a lot today. And in the near future, I'm going to have you on again so we can definitely talk some more, okay?
All right, sounds good. Now, and you one of those young guys that need to stand up and be counted too, man.
Yes, sir. I will continue on that march.
All right. Good, yes, good enough.
Thank you so much. This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. Hope you enjoyed another episode of Local Black History right here in Columbus, Georgia. Man, I tell you, I learned so much today and last week with Mr. Runzel Buckner. Now, we're looking forward to next week as well. We're going to have another amazing guest who's going to be able to tell us some great things and give us some insight. Some direct insight on the integration of the school system. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but you got to be here to listen next Sunday because it's going to be another great show. Again, this is Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese, and I'll see you next Sunday. Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversation? Come and join me, Teddy Reese. Send me an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com. Opinions stated by various contributors to this broadcast, this website, and this radio programs are not to be considered necessarily the beliefs of this radio station or Davis Broadcasting.